Welcome to the United Cast, it's Entertainment Talks podcast for Man United. I'm your host Matthew, and thankfully we don't have a game to review today. Going to do a bit of a transfer wrap-up for the summer, and talk about everything surrounding that and a few other things as well, and also talk about Bruno Fernandes as well. Obviously he's a big contentious player and all that kind of stuff, but there's something I don't know if I've said it before, but something I've kind of noticed, with this, I guess you could say, new system. We've been doing it for almost a year. But with the situation and the midfield and the whole thing with Bruno and the new front three. So I want to talk about all of that. You can consider that to be a sequel to, I do these episodes now and again, in case some of you missed them, called The Curious Case, which is where I take a player who's at a particularly interesting point in their career and talk about essentially the situation that they're in, and go from there. So I have already done that. That episode's a little bit outdated, but some things are still very relevant there. But I wanted to do somewhat of a sequel to it, because his role in this team is a bit different, and there's the whole captain thing and all that kind of stuff. But let's just do a run through of the information in terms of, okay, the transfers we did indeed make, who left the club, who's joined the club, because we do have one new player to talk about. This is in no particular order, but just to kind of round things off, this is mainly for the main exits. We've got Rashford being loaned to Barcelona. Of course, he's already been playing for them. Barcelona have got a £40 million option, so he can come back next year. It's not an obligation fee. Excuse me. So he's already been playing for Barcelona, so he could come back next summer, obviously, if Barcelona want to keep him. If he wants to stay, etc., etc., we'll see what the situation's like in a year. So he's gone off to loan. Rasmus Højlund has gone on loan to, I believe it was Napoli. I didn't actually write the team's name down. Yes, Napoli. I think it was because Lukaku got injured as well. But anyway, this is a bit of a weird one. There is a £6 million loan fee, which I believe Napoli pay us. And a £45 million obligation fee towards Napoli. So that technically means that he's permanently left the club. Now, the first and maybe only time I've ever seen with a player being loaned with an obligation fee. So basically, that club has to pay whatever that transfer fee is by the end of the loan, and then obviously they become a permanent player the next season. But we just saw Jadon Sancho come back from Chelsea. There was supposed to be a £25 million obligation fee paid by Chelsea, and they found a loophole, which was not mentioned at the time, although it may have been in, some small print on the back somewhere, that Chelsea could indeed pay us £5 million to cut out the obligation fee to send him back to us if they no longer wanted him, which we didn't know about until a few weeks until before it happened. At least the public didn't know about it. So he came back to us. So again, now you can take obligation fees permanently with a pinch of salt, because is there going to be some sort of loophole that, I mean, I saw something regarding Napoli have to pay this if they qualify for the Champions League, which I can't see them not doing, because their squad's getting better and better. They've got McTominay, obviously, there's the Bruyne is over there, and although Lukaku's injured, they've got Rasmus Højlund. I'm curious to know, because I don't know how long Lukaku's out injured for them, obviously previously played for us, but once Lukaku comes back, what that means for Højlund, but I guess they'll have to deal with that. But So there's kind of two loopholes with that, which is, okay, is it actually an obligation fee if they qualify for the Champions League, which they should do, because they won the league last season, their Italian league last season. So will that actually count for that? I don't know. But then, of course, they can properly get out of it if they don't qualify for the Champions League, but I can't see that not happening. So We'll see on that one. Garnacho has permanently gone to Chelsea for £40 million. Antony has gone to Betis for £25 million. Sancho's gone on loan. There was no talk of any obligation fee or even optional fee. Of course, with optional fees, it can be if there's no obligation or optional fee, if they really like the player, of course, they can just negotiate when it comes to the end of that and say, hey, when he comes towards the end of his thing here, we like him, we want to buy him. You can still do that. But yeah, with Sancho, I didn't hear anything about an optional or obligation fee with Sancho. So he's gone on loan to Aston Villa, which is also, by the way, where Victor Lindelof has ended up. We released him at the end of his contract last season. It was time for him to go. Of course, we've got new young defenders who are rising in the ranks. So he's going to be playing football with Lindelof, which I guess he's done that before. So, and then Harry Amass, just a smaller one here, has gone on loan to Sheffield Wednesday. Of course, we've got Malassi in terms of the left side, whether it's left centre back or left wing back. We've got Diego Leon. Of course, Dorgu's the main one now. Luke Shaw's there, and then for the left centre back, we've got those players, and you've also got obviously, you know, Martinez, Yura can play there, Heaven can play there. There's a whole host of people. So I'm not sure what that means for someone like Malacia, but Harry Amass got his loan deal through, so he's going to be playing for Sheffield Wednesday for the rest of the season. Yeah, that's all. I think that's all of the outs. So in terms of this, just to address the bomb squad thing, I believe there was 8 players in it at the end. So these are basically the 8 players that Ruben Amorim, our current manager, still our current manager, by the way, had fallen out with, which was Rashford, Sancho, Antony, Malacia, Hoyland, Garnacho, that's 6. I think it was Onana, what was one of, there was 8 of them in the end. It was, Rashford, Hoyland, Garnacho, Antony, Sancho, Malacia. Who were the other ones? There was 8 of them. I think Onana was one of them. Did I say Malacia? I can't remember all of them right now, but the number was at 8 by the end of that time, and we've not got rid of all of those players. So those are the players that have exited, whether it's temporary or permanent. I'm really, really disappointed in the Garnacho situation, I have to say. Yeah, just that one, because I liked pretty much all those players, apart from, I mean, Harry Amass is new, Antony didn't really click with Man United. I'm most happy for Antony here, to be honest. I mean, I don't know why Betis waited until the end of the window to do that deal, because by the end of last season it was very clear that they like him, he likes playing there, he didn't really get on with us, he was happy over there. I think they won a trophy or something as well. I think it was the Europa League or something like that, which they won. They won something, I can't remember what exactly it was, but they won something at the end. And it just seemed like, okay, this is a good fit for everybody. It hasn't really worked out for him at Man United. He's playing basically at almost the levels he was for Ajax. And then they really liked him. He really liked being there. I remember there was quotes of like 30 to 40 million. They've ended up paying 25. So I'm glad the move finally happened for him. Obviously, you know, there was the whole allegations thing that got cleared up or whatever it was that happened there. Obviously it wasn't as serious as the other player that landed in that situation for us. But yeah, happy for him that everybody seems happy with that move. Just the fee is very, very low. That brings me on to a big point, actually. I'll talk about some of these players maybe in a second. Man United have ended up with a really, really, really big problem because, and this is not a Ruben Amorim thing, I think this is more of a post-Alex Ferguson situation where almost every single time, not every single time, but 9 times out of 10, it gets reported that we're interested in a player. And for the most part, we're usually quoted to spend let's say somewhere between 60 and 100 million. I mean, I say 100 million because Belieber was the newest player linked with us, and Brighton quoted 100 million. But it's always 60 million plus with these players that we go for. And every single time in the last couple of years, not even the last couple of years, in recent memory, any time we try and sell someone, who was the last player that we sold for more than 50 million? Lukaku? Was that 70 million? The transfer to... I can't remember if that actually was Napoli or he went somewhere else first. I can't quite remember. Talking about 5 years ago. But... because there's a lot of... and I genuinely don't believe... cause there's something else I want to mention with transfer fees and stuff as well in a minute, which is I find really, really interesting. Let me just stick to this topic first. If you're... now, Man United are a football club. Of course, the success happens on the pitch, right? If we lose too many things, we end up not getting money for other things. And if we win lots of things and finish high up in the table, we become more of an attractive football club. Sponsorship, revenue, you know, ticket sales, shirt sales. You know, if things are all good and rosy at the football club, we're winning things. I mean, we don't even have to play good football necessarily. You do just have to get results. As much as it's healthy to play very, very good football, at the end of the day, if you're in very bad form, but you're getting results and winning trophies, the end result is the end result. You know, it matters, you know, more what the scoreline is at the end of the game. Anyway, if you're all roses, a football club, and you're winning trophies, not all of them, but like, you know, one or two here and there every, you know, year or a couple of years at least, and you're finishing high up in the league, getting Champions League qualification, which I think now in of itself, Champions League qualification is worth 200 million. If you're doing that, then obviously that's very, very good and the ideal thing to do. On the other hand, if you're like us and, okay, we've had some decent success in the last couple of years. We had an FA Cup at the end of the season before last, a Carabao Cup season before that. We had an FA Cup a few years before that. We had a Europa League kind of recently. There's been a few here and there. And of course, lots of like Champions League qualifications and stuff. But if you consistently sell players, whether it's academy players like Garnacho, 40 million, or signed players like Antony, 25 million, if you're consistently selling players for, let's say, 20 to 40 million, and then buying them for 60 to 100 million, let's say more closer to 60 to 80, let's go 0 to 40. For the sales, and then 60 to 80 for the purchases, because the 100 million ones are a bit more rarer. Your books are going to be very imbalanced at some point if you're consistently selling people for 40 million and buying them for 60. That's just how that works. For example, obviously Rashford was an academy player, although he hasn't been sold yet, so that money's not come in. Rasmus Højlund. I'll just use these players here as an example. Rasmus Højlund, bought him for, I believe it was 75 to 80, sold him for 45. That's a loss. Garnacho, obviously, that's profit there, 40 million, although that should have been more still. So it's still, the thing there is different, but what I'm saying is still the same thing, is you've sold him for a very, very, very low amount of money. Antony was bought for, what, 80 to 90 million? I know some places quote 100 million. I think it was 80 to 90. You've bought him for 80 to 90 million and sold him for 25. That's even worse than Højlund. Sancho, of course, we haven't like sold him yet, but we know that more likely when than if that sale happens, it will be between 25 to 40 million. Paid 75 for him. Man United have got to find some sort of way of changing that, and I don't know what the answer is to that, but that's a very, very bad situation to be in. You cannot keep getting quoted 60 to 80 million for buying people and then 20 to 40 for selling them. Because as much as... because the way that those two things clash is like, let's say we won a trophy every couple of years, we got Champions League qualification every, you know, once every two seasons or something, and there was at least a stream of that money coming in, as well as, you know, shirt sales, ticket sales, sponsors, all that revenue. that will help the books a little bit. But if you're still doing the 40 and then the 60, 80 or whatever, you're still basically losing money on every... unless they're academy players like a Garnacho or... on people like Garnacho and people like Rashford, if Rashford does get sold. Although you'll make your money there, which we shouldn't really be like clearing out the academy for the sake of doing that. But the thing is, we've been doing that for like, yeah, over 10 years at this point. And we need to find... See, because I was going to sit here and say, like, okay, with these players, with all of these players, apart from maybe Amas, he's a bit different. The way that we handled the bomb squad thing this season was a terrible idea. Because when it came to, okay, the Rashford comments with the, you know, put my old coach, I'd rather put my old coach on the bench rather than Rashford, that's damaging his value. And then when you go and say something like, I pray that Garnacho finds a new football club, that's damaging that player's value. So as much as you can't blame that entire problem that I've labelled on Ruben Amorim, it certainly didn't help when it's like... And I know the Sancho problem goes back a bit further than that, but it's sort of... If you want other teams, whether it's, you know, teams that aren't in England or teams that are in England, and you're trying to sell, you're trying to say to this team, do you want this, we're shipping off this player, do you want them? But the way that we handled it, the way that we consistently handle this, and it was worse in this summer window than it was in maybe any other ones, is... We've almost tried to advertise these players as like, okay, these players are not in form, they're on higher wages, we don't like them, do you want them? You've almost got to work more on your marketing. Like, you don't really think of a football club as like a marketing because you're not selling, you know, video games or products. You're getting people to tune in to watch football games. But when it does come to products, but in a different way, because like, we're not buying the players, right? We're not selling the players, other teams are. If you're going to a team and saying like, hey, we had this player, he was really good, he's not so great now, can you buy him for 60 plus million, he's got really high wages because most of our players are on like, you know, 200 to 300 plus, I was gonna say million, no, not 200 million a week, 200 to 300,000 a week. But we really, we're approaching the situation in this sort of desperate manner. Because I'm not fully tuned in on what other teams do. I don't notice other teams really doing that per se. It's like with Isak, for example, right? Like, one of the probably top two best strikers in the world, at least top five, if not top two best strikers in the world. And... obviously, with Isak, he's seen Liverpool as a bigger prospect than Newcastle, which, although Newcastle are on the rise, they won the Carabao Cup, they got Champions League qualification, etc., etc., Liverpool's a much more attractive outfit and a much more consistently attractive outfit than someone like Newcastle. You just won the league, you've got a great manager there, you've got, you know, like a really, really great setup. But, and that was never derailed in the way of like, oh, this player's really good, but we damaged him, do you want him? Like, oh, he used to be good, but he's not so great now, do you want him? Liverpool always knew, and Newcastle always knew, how brilliant Isak is as a footballer. But if Newcastle approached that situation like we did and be like, oh, you know what, we want to get rid of him, we've fallen out with him, he's on high wages, do you want him? That just, whether it is Man United or somebody else, that's not going to make a football club go, right, we'll give you 80 million. He's really worth, by the way you've just described him, he's really worth a lot. Let's give you 80 million. Like, with Rashford, for example, and they've agreed to a £40 million optional fee, there's no way Barcelona had no reason to do it in a way of, oh, what's the manager got to say about the player? Oh, he'd rather put his old goalkeeper coach on the bench instead. Oh, why is that? Oh, 350 grand a week? Like, what are you trying to sell us here? Some sort of, like, damaged goods? That is the way that we treat our players. It's really, really bad, actually. But we also do it in this really not just in a damaging way, but a really desperate way. Like, because the Antony one's so much worse than the other ones here in terms of loss of money, because although it was like, okay, Ten Hag likes him, right, you know, he's going to play on the right wing, 80 million, he's really skillful, really good, unfortunately that just didn't work out. But we went way past that. Like, he could have played more for Ruben Amorim. I can't remember how much he actually did. Obviously, he was on loan at Betis for a bit of time. But, like, with Antony, for example, it's like, we've approached, and granted, that was more of a healthier situation, but it was still sort of, when we tried to maybe pitch him towards other teams, it's like, please, please, take this player off our hands. And you almost have to wonder as other clubs, like, okay, why are you so desperate, like, really, really on your knees begging, desperate for, like, please just take, you know, we'll take a fiver for him. That's what it almost feels like sometimes, right? Like, you shouldn't have to, as a football club, after you spent £80 million on a player, and I know it's not actually a fiver, but it feels like when we're shopping off people like Antony, of like, he's on really high wages, he costs us a lot of money, we really, really need to get this player off the books, because every week that goes by, it's another 200 odd grand a week that's gone, and we really, really need to get rid of him. It turns into, and it's a problem with just overpaying for players. Because, yes, we overpaid for Antony, 80 million, and that's not on the player, that's on the negotiations of the two clubs. We overpaid for him, we overpaid him, because we overpay far too many of our players. But it just turns into such a desperate, like, please, take us off, take him off our hands, please, give us £5. It's so... It's really, really bad. We really, really have to, and we can't really do anything. The club has to do something about it. We really have to find some way of dealing with that, because that won't get better. In fact, it feels like that overall situation is getting so much worse for Manchester United. The Garnacho one, the Garnacho one's different to the Antony one, but it's sort of, again, you're falling out with the manager. We know he can be a really, really great player. I really, really like Garnacho. But when it's, again, sort of, okay, you're going to play in the reserves on your, or you're going to train on your own or whatever, and we're again on our knees to Chelsea, and we had to pick Chelsea because Garnacho basically said, like, I only want to sign for Chelsea. He turned down, like, other clubs. He turned down Bayern Munich. He only wanted to play for Chelsea. He wanted to stay in the Premier League. So that's then worse in almost a different way of, it's not a case that we overpaid for Garnacho because we got him for free, because he's an academy player. So anything we do get for him is pure profit, but it's still, like, Garnacho's worth a lot more than, it should be in that bracket of the 60 to 100 million pound player. He should be in that, like, he is that good. And I think you're going to see him, depending on how much he plays, or I can't remember the manager's name, but what he does with him, because again, it's just an environment thing. Like, you've fallen out with the manager, he's told you to pray to find a new football club, that's damaging. He still is very young, he's like 20-21, he's still got lots of potential, he's still a really, really great player. Obviously his attitude started to get worse, but I kind of understand why. Yeah, it's essentially like, this isn't a case of, he's not great anymore, can you take him off us, like Antony is. Again, did better at Betis, but, you know, didn't really work for us. It's, no, he's actually a really, really good player. The manager's fallen out with him. He's not actually on that much money because he's very young. But our manager's made it clear he's never playing for us again. At least under his wing. He only wants you so we can only sell him to you because he won't sign a contract for anybody else. Can you please take him off of our hands? Again, it's a different type of desperation almost, but... it's a different desperation of that kind of thing. I do really, really hate, by the way, that when it comes to Rashford and Garnacho and a little bit with Hoyland isn't quite the same thing. We've picked this manager over those three players, and I would not do that. I mean, I've made my stance on the manager very clear, but that's just really, really disappointing because... you could very well have had a situation, again, Anthony's different, you could very well have had a situation where we get a better manager in, which we should have done ages ago, but, you know, don't want to beat a dead horse there, and a new manager comes in, gets better out of Rashford, gets better out of Hoyland, gets better with Garnacho and Sancho, because there's, regardless of how you personally feel about those players, and like the social media posts and all that sort of thing, all those players are talented. I think we really... Do you know what I think with Hoyland towards the end? I know I did a particular episode on him. I think we messed him up. Because I think the mistake we made with him was... Okay, he was getting bashed because he wasn't scoring. And I still maintain it was because we were not giving him good enough service. Which you're starting to see early with Sesko, by the way. Just a little bit of an early note on that. The whole service problem that we're doing. He loses his confidence, looks like he's stumbling all over the ball when he gets it. You try to get him to consistently hold up the ball, which he wasn't good at, but we kept doing it. And then when you keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing, get him to do that, and then he plays every game, plays every game, plays every game, plays every game, I think we just destroyed his confidence. So I think you might again see, I mean, I don't know how well he will get on at Napoli. Especially when he gets two goals in his first game at Napoli, looks confident, looks like that confident version of him that we had, and we're like, well, we messed up another one. I think the same thing's going to happen with Garnacho. I think he's going to go over there and I think he's going to do really well. And we'll be like, oops, guess we let another one go, good one go. Because I don't think with any of these, really, it's a case of they suddenly turned bad. Football's a very mental game as well. Like, you think of how... I've talked about this a bit before, but I think it's actually worse now. How toxic it would be to play for Manchester United right now. You just finished 15th, you kept the manager that did that, the manager's slagging off almost every player, the squad itself is getting smaller, so we just keep getting these exits and whatnot. There's all this, like, the bad PR and stuff going on right now, and we start wondering, like, oh, why is Cobby not looking as great? Why is Ahmad not looking as great? Well, they're still the young players in this team, and when they don't have seniors to turn to, or their captain's throwing a strop, what are you supposed to do about that? What are you supposed to do about that? So, like, yeah, in the Grimsby game, for example, Cobby wasn't as great. Ahmed looked a bit odd. But, like, look at the situation we've put these players in. You can't expect employees to perform in a toxic situation. And then again, Rasmus, like, we've battered his confidence. We've actually absolutely destroyed his confidence. And then as soon as he gets the ball every time, like, you've got to get the ball every single time you score. It's just not gonna, it's not gonna work that way. Hoyland, I know, is a little bit older than I think some of these guys, but still young. But confidence is confidence. If you destroy a player's confidence and you keep playing them and you don't give them a rest, like Hoyland, because we couldn't be bothered to buy another striker, it's just going to get worse from that. And it does annoy me, actually, that, oh, we've got Sesko, therefore we don't need Hoyland. Why can't we have two strikers? Because, okay, Sesko's played a chunk of time now. He started, I think, two games, some sub appearances. He's not looked great so far. He's not looked full of confidence. But what could help a situation like that is, okay, let's say Hoyland, his confidence is really low, put him on the bench, just taking him out of the firing line, put a fresh Sesko in there, maybe he, you know, does some stuff, and they can rotate and they can compete with each other. Well, I guess that's gone now, isn't it? So, I don't understand this idea in recent years that, oh, because we signed this player that's in the same position, we have to get rid of the other one. Let them fight each other for competition. We've been so desperately lacking for competition in this squad, it's really quite alarming. Yeah, it just, I don't like it. I really, really don't like it. So, anyway. So that's all the exits to talk about. We do have a brand new goalkeeper to talk about as well. Someone called, I might mispronounce his name, I've not heard his name be said yet. Lemens, I think his name is. He's Belgian from Antwerp. Bought him for 21 million. He's 23 years old. And we signed him on a 2-year, it says 2027, so 2-year contract. Sene Lemens, Belgium goalkeeper. I couldn't tell you for the life of me if he's any good. I hadn't heard of him until we were linked with him. I've never seen him play football before. So, again, any new player that comes into Manchester United, I want to wish them luck, of course, whether they're a new academy player, new signing, whatever. You put on that Man United shirt for the first time, I'm going to be rooting for you because I want you to do well for my football club. But you've got another potential confidence issue here, right? Like, our two goalkeepers have consistently been dropping the ball and making mistakes and blah, 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 whatever else, right? So we needed a new goalkeeper. And again, because we've battered Onana's confidence, battered Baye's confidence, and basically told the world, like, these two goalkeepers are rubbish, don't buy them. That's basically what we've done again, is like, hey, everyone, who has goalkeeper? Andre Onana. He drops the ball all the time, he's rubbish, we've destroyed his confidence. He's rubbish. Do you want to buy him? No, we don't, because you've just told us he's terrible. And again, with Biyende, who I think is a bit younger, it's like, oh, the mistake against Arsenal, one mistake, granted, it led to a goal. Let's batter his confidence and tell the world that, hey, we want to get rid of this player that we think is terrible. Do you guys want him? Of course, nobody wants either of those two players now. So again, we're lumped with another two goalkeepers that apparently we don't want either of. And what do we go and do? Rather than buying an experienced goalkeeper who's got some confidence, we buy somebody who, from what I understand, has not even been playing football that long, is 23 years old, and is going to put the Man United shirt on and have balls kicked at him, quite literally. So how do you think that this situation might go based on what I've just described about the other players? What is going to happen the first time that this guy drops the ball? Or the first time that he doesn't quite punch a ball properly? Or the first time he misplaces a pass? Or when he does one of those things for the first time and everyone goes, ah, look at this guy, it's another bad goalkeeper, it's another bad goalkeeper. Okay, we didn't buy this one for as much, which means we'll probably let him go for free in 2 years or something. We bought him in, 23 years old. 23 is very young. It's mentally very young. He's not played hardly any football. So, yeah, why not put him in front of 75,000 people, put a Man United shirt on him, and, like, guess what, man? If you misplace a pass, drop the ball, accidentally palm the ball to another player because you're nervous, you know what we're going to do? We got nobody in this team who steps up for confidence or backs up our young players. So you're going to get bullied on social media when you drop the ball. And then when you see the comments for the first time, after you've dropped the ball for the first time, you're going to have that in the back of your mind when you're next playing, and then you're going to do it again, and then it's going to get worse, and then we're going to want to get rid of you. Does that sound correct? That sounds correct to me. So I don't know why we didn't go for a more experienced goalkeeper. If you want this guy as like a second string goalkeeper, but then if you want this guy and another guy, that's then five goalkeepers, because Tom Heaton is still here. Which is weird, actually, because he's actually the most experienced. I think he's like 35. And when people talk about what's wrong with Biyende and Onana, they bring up the fact that Heaton doesn't have those problems. So maybe we just should have bought this guy, because this guy will be number one now. Lament, he'll be number one. Why don't you have him on the bench and play Tom Heaton? We pay him. He is a goalkeeper for this football club. He is older, he is experienced, and according to everybody else, he doesn't have the same problems as Onana and Biyende. So why don't we just start him? Because if you start him and Heaton drops the ball anyway and does the same thing as Onana, at least you've tried somebody else. I don't know. At least with this guy, okay, we only bought him for 21 million. So in a couple of years, when we've bullied his confidence and destroyed him, not saying that that will definitely happen, but, you know, hypothetical scenario. When we do that, and then we sell him for not actually 5 quid, but 5 million quid, at least we won't have lost as much money. So there's that. And then we'll probably buy our next goalkeeper. So look, I know that Man United is a team about, you know, young talent, bringing through young talent, whether it is the academy and whatnot. But we need to start learning as a football club that you don't have to buy somebody who's either 32 or 23. I don't understand why we're not buying more players in their peak. That's something we haven't really done. Let me just check with, now that I've said that. Joshua Zirkzee, 24. Mateus Cunha, okay, 26. Okay, he's one who's a bit more in his peak. I don't think he's looked that great yet, but he's an example. And Brian Mbeumo, 26. So those two are in what, because to me, what's considered peak of your career is 25 to 30. So those are two that we've actually done that with. And then you've got Sesko, who is, if this will load, I think it's about 22. So that's what I don't get with the Sesko signing, is like Hoyland was about 22, 23, and you've just replaced him with somebody of the same age. So if we continue giving Sesko no service, which we've already started doing, you're just replacing Hoyland with another slightly taller Hoyland. So we'll see how that one goes, I suppose. Yeah, anyway. So that's that. This is the mess that Man United find themselves in. We've got problems off the field, on the field, in the transfer market. Because, like, I look at Liverpool now and I'm like, okay, you're at the top of your game, you just won your 20th title, you've equaled our record, you've had something devastating happen to you, and rest in peace to Diego Jota and his brother. Obviously, it's a devastating loss. I know I've not really talked about that, but this isn't a Liverpool podcast. And it's good for them, really, that, like, they've got 3 wins out of 3. Granted, a little bit shaky at Bournemouth, I think it was, but, like, it's kind of good in a way that they've not... I mean, obviously, they'll be very, very sad about Jota's passing, and he was a great player and all that sort of thing, but, like, they've not let it rock. Rather than them going, right, we're going to let this get us down in the dumps, which I'm sure that they are in a certain way, they're grieving for this player, they've started using it as, like, celebrating at 20 minutes. And, you know, as much as us as Man United, we might not like Liverpool, they're our rivals, they're our big historical rivals, you've got to respect them for what they've done. Like, they've taken this Jota situation and gone, right, it's a sad thing, but we're going to, you know what, we're going to go out and spend a bunch of money, try and get a bunch of players, improve our attack. We've got Isak now, we've got Ekatike and Wirtz and all these great players. The midfield's already really great, defence is pretty great, still got a very good goalkeeper. But, like, I think they have this thing now, don't they, at Anfield, when it's sort of, you know, no matter the score or whatever, when it's at the 20th minute mark, we'll celebrate Jota's life, get you know, uplift the mood. So it's wild how, like, they've had something really devastating happen to them, which it could have, like, hurt the football club a lot, right? Like, it could have started hurting performances, and I've not seen that at all, but, and they just went and beat Arsenal and all that, but they've used that as sort of, let's let this lift us as a football club, like, remember him properly, celebrate him, but still try and push on and be successful, and don't, like I just said, football's a very mental game, and luckily and thankfully, at least in recent memory, we haven't had, apart from, of course, Kathy, our receptionist, rest in peace to her, we haven't had, like, a player die or something like that, that's, we've let it get us down or something. We've just had crappy PR and a crappy manager, and, you know, we just bully all of our footballers for trying. Whereas with Liverpool, it's, you know, let's not let this thing get us down, let's use it to celebrate his life and celebrate his club, and because that's what they're like, the people of Liverpool, they use that kind of thing as, you know, something to lift them up, because they're a really great community. Like, you've got the You'll Never Walk Alone song, and that obviously fits in nicely with Jota passing away, the whole, you know, he won't walk alone, and there's just great spirits over there right now. I can't see them not winning the league this season, because I don't think Arsenal got it in them. Man City look a bit weird right now. They keep seeming to get rid of players. I think Gundogan's leaving them as well. Chelsea might surprise people, I think. I think they'll be better this year. And that's about it. I don't think Newcastle got it in them. I don't think Villa have. We certainly haven't got it in us to go for the league title. I don't see a world where they don't win it again, and they'll overtake our record, and it will look worse on us. And we really have to do something about the situation that we're in as a football club. We've got to stop bullying our footballers. We've got to stop bullying our young talent and going, oh, they played badly for 2 games, get rid of them. You know, we've got to start supporting our players, but Anyway, yeah, that's what I had to say about that. But yeah, good luck to Laments. You know, if you do drop the ball, of course you'll get criticised for it and whatever, but hopefully we can support this player. He is young, he's very inexperienced from what I understand, so, you know, when he drops the ball the first time, because it will happen, let's not bully him and try and kick him out of Old Trafford before he's even got started, you know. So, anyway, best of luck to him. I hope he does well. So, yeah. Anyway, I want to talk about Bruno and some midfield stuff and all that. So, I was going to talk about the individual players that have left, but I'm just disappointed that we've thrown away Antony aside, and obviously Amas's loan aside. Like, man, Rashford, Hoyland, Garnacho, Sancho, there's talent there. It just has to be nurtured properly. And we've completely butchered all four of those players. So, but anyway, good luck Sancho at Aston Villa, good luck Garnacho at Chelsea, good luck Hoyland at Napoli, good luck Rashford at Barcelona. Did I miss one of them? And good luck Antony at Betis as well. I hope with Antony he just goes over there and picks up the form that he left there. So, anyway, let's take a break. It's probably a good time to do that. I'll come back and talk about Bruno in the midfield and some other bits and bobs like that. See if that in a minute. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, back with the second half of the podcast. Let's talk about Bruno a bit and focus on him. Obviously, he's always a big talking point for Manchester United, but I want to talk about him in a particular way. And then talk a bit about our midfield, because of course, we bought a new front line, we brought at least one wing back, we didn't need any defenders, we just needed possibly another wing back, and could be argued we needed another goalkeeper, although we didn't really try hitting out, but whatever. But the one gaping hole yet again in our team is midfield. We did not address it at all. In fact, we lost a player in Toby Collier. He could have contributed to the team. He's out on loan. Almost loaned Kobbie Mainoo, who, by the way, just to talk about low transfer fees, although it was never properly talked about in terms of Kobbie Mainoo being sold, which would have been, goodness me, which would have been crazy. There was a quoted fee I saw. Can you guess what the fee I saw was? Take a wild guess. It was a pitiful 45 million. That was the fee that I saw quoted. Now, nobody put in like a bid for that. That was never properly talked about. I think they just said like, okay, what we value this player at or something. And I saw a quoted fee of 45 million, which is... You look at Garnacho and you look at Kobbie, and those were the two of like, we can't really sell them. Well, they could have been sold for a combined fee of 85 million, which is still pathetic. Like, when we were in talks about, because this also happened, by the way, we were in talks, this was before we bought Sesco, we were evaluating our, what's it called? Our forward options. Of course, there was like Ossenheim and Jokeres and Sesco and Ekitike and all those players. And I don't think it was directly quoted to us, but it was quoted from Chelsea that they were looking at selling Jackson for 80 to 100 million pounds. So, yeah, they're out here trying to ship him off. He did go to Bayern Munich. I'm not sure what the fee actually was, but it wasn't 40 or 45 million. So, anyway, that almost happened again, but we blocked his loan move. Anyway, midfield. Let's talk about who plays for us in midfield right now, because there aren't many of them. We've got Casemiro, Bruno Fernandes, and I'm going to just mention the senior players, so not people like Jack Fletcher or Tyler Fletcher or Kone. Those people might make some appearances, but let's focus on our first team players. Casemiro, Bruno Fernandes, Kobbie Mainoo, Mason Mount, and Manuel Ugarte. That's it. Granted, we only use two of them at a time, although sometimes we use Mason Mount higher up the pitch. Mason Mount's picked up another injury. Hopefully that's not for too long, because he did actually start getting some decent, you know, run and form and things like that. So, our midfield usually gets run through because it's got two people in it and it usually plays up against three people. I won't talk about that again because I always talk about the three versus the two. Casemiro, Bruno Fernandes usually start in there. We know that that midfield combination doesn't really work because they're both a bit too old, haven't really got the legs to run around for 90 minutes and chase three people around in midfield. Kobbie Mainoo can play in there, but really if he does, he needs a much better DM partner who's better than Ugarte and better than Casemiro. Bruno Fernandes plays in there, although arguably he should be playing higher up the pitch, but he can't because of reasons I'll be describing in a minute. And then you've got Ugarte, who is alright. He's not played great lately, he's been giving the ball away and things like that. So essentially the answer there is we don't have a proper answer to those midfield two. Now if you're coming up against a really, really difficult team, which most teams we find difficult to play against these days, you're going to want to pack that midfield two out with two defensive-minded people. And the only two proper answers to that is Casemiro and Ugarte. The problem we now have with Bruno Fernandes, let's just focus on him for a second, because he's the big talking point. Where he'd be more ideal to play is somewhere in and amongst the front three. You come across another problem, which is that we just bought a brand new front three, and if you start playing Bruno in and amongst the new front three, you'd be right to ask questions as to, well, why is Cunha not playing? Why is Mbeumo not playing? Why is Sesco not playing? We just bought them. 60 million, 70 million, and I believe about 80 million for Sesco. Let's say 75. So, you spent over 100 million. I think nearly 200, actually that's near the 200 million, isn't it? Yeah, about 200 million on a brand new front three. So you expect them to kick on, start playing, develop chemistry, etc, etc. We know that Bruno Fernandes doesn't really work in a midfield two. So if you've now got a situation where your captain and your undroppable player shouldn't really be playing in a midfield two because it's not really ideal for him, and we don't have a proper partner for him in midfield because Casemiro is not a viable option for that, and Ugarte is not really great in the midfield two option for that either. So where do you put him? You're not going to put him at wing back, you're not going to put him at centre back, you're not going to put him in goal. So where do you put Bruno Fernandes for Manchester United? You put him in the midfield too with Casemiro and you struggle through the rest of the season, basically. Now, the other problem is with that is we were quoted for Belieber, who's a Brighton midfielder, for 100 million. Now, I've heard that, because I haven't really seen much of him myself. Now, he's probably played against us a couple of times, but I've not really like noticed him. What he's been described as is more of like a fast ball-playing, ball-carrying midfielder. So that sounds to me a bit more like Kobbie Mainoo, who's supposed to be somebody who, you know, will pick up the ball in midfield, skip past a player or two, we know he can do that, drive it forward, and then, you know, progress the ball from there. Now, Mason Mount can kind of do that, although Mason Mount's more of a sort of get stuck in, link the play up, that kind of player. and, you know, be good at pressing on the ball and that kind of thing. So Mount arguably kind of works better in the front three, but again, you've got a brand new front three. Yeah, so we didn't go and buy a proper, like, we basically need our next Matic, is what we now need, is somebody who will, like, pick up the ball from the back three, play it to that midfield ball carrier, they'll progress it forward, maybe pass it wide, and then, you know, you work forward from there. At least is the way I understand it. So if we did go and buy Belieber, now I think the problem with that would have been, now we didn't go and get him, which I actually think is a good thing. So, again, talk about confidence, talk about mentality, all that sort of thing. We're crying out for a new midfielder, and essentially what it sounds like we could have ended up doing is buying the wrong one, because if we'd gone out and bought a 22-year-old player for 100 million, or let's say we negotiated, we knocked it down to 90, that's still, again, paying 80-plus million, 60-plus million for another footballer, rather than paying a cheaper price. Because if Brighton quoted him at 100 million, you're not getting him for less than 60, are you? They're just, why would you do that for? What would then have happened is, like, oh my god, yes, we got this, like, guy who can kind of do the DM role, although is apparently better higher up the pitch, progressing the ball and bursting forward, because what I've heard he's very good at is, like, bursting forward, which, again, Cobbie kind of is there to do that. So he doesn't actually sound like the way I've heard this player described is not the same thing as like a Matic type sort of, you know, take the ball off of the defence, dictate the play from deep, win the ball back, you know, deep in defence, deep in midfield, and like progress it forward. He doesn't sound like that type of player to me. So it's good that we didn't go and spend 100 million on a 22-year-old, and then as soon as he doesn't do what we need him to do in midfield, because apparently he wasn't the actual answer to that, although he sounds like a great player, so, you know, go and get him. And then we would start moaning at him for, you know, not doing what we wanted him to do. Plus, again, you know, 22-year-old, 100 million, you're our problem to midfield. And we start shaking him and going, you know, why aren't you doing what we want? kind of thing again. Which would have been a terrible solution to that situation. Now, in a year or so, if we go and buy him for 60 or 80, but then we buy a Matic-type player, that could be better, but that's for next year. We'll worry about next year. So, yeah, that's our midfield situation. It's not good. I don't know, like, unless you play Casemiro and Ugarte in midfield, which is the two DM tackling options, but then again, where do you put Bruno? Here's my temporary answer to the Bruno situation, because the midfield two situation, I don't, again, unless you play Ugarte and Casemiro, but then where do you put Bruno? But my answer is different to what the club will actually do. Okay, let's look at Bruno Fernandes as a footballer. Forget any, you know, if you do or don't like him as a footballer, which I don't currently like him as a footballer. What is Bruno Fernandes good at doing? He's got a lot of GA. He gets a lot of assists, he scores a lot of goals, of course he's our penalty taker, all that kind of stuff. He's now at an age where, like, you don't really want Bruno running around in midfield. He was never somebody who's going to dictate play from deep, because he always kicks the ball long. He's not your sort of Cobbie, even Matic type, or Belieber type. Like, he doesn't fit any of those profiles of, like, win the ball deep in midfield anywhere and progress the ball forward. That's not what Bruno's good at doing. In fact, it's actually what he's quite bad at doing at times, because he does give the ball away when he's deeper in midfield. I think we should keep Bruno as far away from that situation as possible, because we always moan at him for losing the ball or losing concentration or winning the ball in our box and booting it up midfield, being the grenade launcher. We always moan at him for it. So what about if you just did the opposite and kept Bruno as close to the opposition goal as possible? So what's the answer to that? I think you play him up front. Why don't we start turning this guy into a striker? Because if you basically tell Bruno to play in and amongst the front three, but specifically as that number nine, and you could play the abundance of options in the two tens in midfield, there's a number of them, and those players could work to get the ball to Bruno in the box. Because I think that's where you want Bruno, really, is in the ball, in and around the, at least the edge of the box. Maybe not just outside the box, because he can still tend to give it away in certain situations. In and around the edge of the box, either giving an assist to his teammate, like passing it through to somebody, or actually just scoring the goal himself, because he does have a pretty good finish on him at times. I think that's ultimately your answer. The problem you've then got is you've then got an £80 million or £75 million young 22-year-old Sesko sitting on the bench. And the other problem you then come across is if we still view Bruno Fernandes as an undroppable player, which he still is, if you end up in a different scenario where instead of Bruno being poor in midfield and not being dropped and everybody around him gets subbed off apart from him, if you end up in a scenario where Bruno gets stroppy in a game and, you know, is being a poor captain, and you don't want then a stroppy Bruno Fernandes up front who's not scoring you goals, because what you would then need to do is sub him off for Sesko, which I still don't think would happen. I still think that scenario is better than let's play him in the midfield two and hope for the best. I still don't think, I said it for ages, I still don't think having two in midfield in a Premier League on their own is a good idea anyway, regardless of who it is. Because unless you have two, unless you have N'Golo Kante and Nemanja Matic in their prime in those midfield two, that's essentially what you need. You need two dogs in midfield who are going to run around like headless chickens and have pace and power and energy for 90 minutes and are going to successfully run after three players in midfield, but do it in a better coordinated way. Bruno Fernandes is not going to give you that. Casemiro is not really going to give you that, and Ugarte is not really going to give you that. So that's your option, essentially. I think if you're going to make this player undroppable, which he shouldn't be, just put him where he's arguably best, which is next to the opposition's goal where he can kick the ball in the net, and use him as this, like, a bit like how we used Ronaldo when he came back. Like, Ronaldo stopped being this fast, trickery, pacey winger that he was, you know, for Arsenal, Real Madrid and Juventus. He stopped being that player. He was clearly not that player anymore. We brought him back and it was like, right, we know Ronaldo can still get header on the goal. We know he can still finish well and all that in the box. So just get the ball to him in the box. I think we need to turn Bruno into our new Ronaldo, but hopefully with better success. I don't think Ruben Amorim's going to do that though. So I think you're basically going to see a team from now on of Lemens, probably Euro, Delit, Martinez or Heaven or some combination of those, and then probably Ahmad, Bruno, Casemiro, Dorgu, and then Mbeumo, you know, Cunha, Sesko. And I think with Cunha being out for a bit, you're just going to see probably Xerxes put there or somebody like that. Who else do we have in this team? Oh my God, who else do we have? Or Ahmad plays there or Kobbie plays there. And then if you do play Ahmad further up, you've got Dalot on the right wing back. Man, our squad really is small. I'm just going to look through now. First team players, okay? Lemens is obviously going to be our first team goalkeeper. Defenders, so Dalot can play right centre-back, but you don't really want him there. You've got Heaven, Maguire, Mazraoui, Shaw, Euro, Delit. I do like that selection of players. You've got those. Those were for like the three, you know, centre back positions. Then midfield, I've already been through that, which is basically just again Casemiro, Bruno, Kobbie, Mount, Ugarte. Then forwards, we've got now Ahmad, who gets played at right wing back anyway. Cunha, who's going to be out for a bit. He might be back for the City game anyway, it sounds like. That's in 2 weeks' time, so we don't really know. He might be back for that game. Cunha. So, specifically front three players, Mbeumo, Xerxes, Obi. I don't know how much Obi's going to play. And you've got Sesko and Xerxes. It's not a lot, really, is it? Because now you're looking at, like, okay, Cunha's injured at the moment. What do you do if Sesko gets injured? Because what we've not really done in this transfer window is gone, okay, there's a few backups for backups, but, like, you can have fatigue, you can have things like, you know, obviously international duty, you can get injured from that. That could happen over these next 2 weeks. You've got suspensions, you've got, like, sudden injuries as well, like where you can have players like suddenly pull up hamstring, that's, you know, out for a bit. Injuries can, you know, be surprising and stuff, and obviously with our history, we've not got the best medical record with players. So you look at our forward line right now and you go, right, Cunha's out for a bit, that could be for 2 weeks, it could be long for longer, but then, like, if he doesn't come back properly, doesn't settle back properly, what does that look like? Mason Mount, we don't know how long he's going to be out for. So right now, like, okay, if Sesko gets sent off by accident or gets injured or is fatigued, you put Xerxes there, I suppose, and then you put Mbeumo and Ahmad up front. But then, like, okay, you put Dalot at right wing back, but what if something happens to him? You probably put Mazraoui there. Mazraoui's not really great at right wing back, so there's some options, but there's not loads of options, really. So yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting situation. Anyway, I think I covered the Bruno thing. Well, I just think if you're saying, like, if you're handing me this squad right now, the thing is, though, if you hand me this squad, I'm not playing a 3-4-3. I'm just gonna change it to a back four straight away with three midfield. And then I'm going to put probably Cobby, Casemiro, and Mount or Bruno. And then I would probably recall Rashford from loan. I would recall Sancho from loan. I would do what I could to get Hoyland's thing cancelled. I would do what I could to get Garnacho's thing cancelled. And I would have a bigger and better squad. So there you go. Yeah, so, but then I would, yeah, just change it to a 4-3-3, or, you know, some combination of three in midfield, and I would just play a normal way of football. But, okay, if you're handing me the squad and say, okay, you must play, not the same system, but you must play the same formation as Ruben Amorim, I'll probably do the normal thing that he does, and then I would put Ugarte and Casemiro midfield, because those are the two DM players that you do currently have. I'd probably recall Collier from loan as well, because I would be rotating him. Or again, if one of those two players in midfield has a bad game, maybe take them off, put Collier on. I'd try Bruno Fernandes up front. I'd play Cobby in the left 10, probably Mbeumo left 10. I'd probably try Shaw at left wing back for a bit, maybe play Dorgu there, and then I'd play Ahmad right wing back. That's probably what I would do. But if you're saying to me, like, okay, I have to take this squad as it is right now, I can't recall any of these players or anything else, that's what I would do. Casemiro, Ugarte in the middle, Bruno actually as a striker, Cobby left 10, because I'm actually not that impressed with Cunha right now anyway, so I'd put him there. I am a bit more impressed with Mbeumo, so I'd put him right 10, and I'd go from there. So, anyway, talked about a bunch of stuff here. This is your kind of off-season international break podcast. Take that for what it is. I've said a lot of different things here, so whatever. I'll be back for the City game on the, I believe it's the 14th of September, in just under 2 weeks. But that's the transfer wrap-up. That's my thoughts on everything. But I'm just not happy with Manchester United Football Club right now. On, off, in and around the pitch. Certainly on the pitch. But we'll see. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. If you've got any thoughts, feelings, questions, comments on anything I mentioned, matthew@entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter, social media, etalkycareentertainmenttalk, and there's information in your show notes. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org, TV, games, films, Man United podcast. Take a look out for all those things as well. Yeah, so you can do that. So what did I say? Yeah, said the email, said information in the show notes, all that kind of stuff. If you want to support all the content that we do, it's on entertainmenttalk.org, TV, games, films, Man United podcast. Look out for more stuff. Obviously in the future, got a probably quite big gaming talk tomorrow, so look out for that. Still got weapons to go and see, I'm aware of that. And some other things to do. There won't be another United cast for 2 weeks, so give me time to do some other stuff. Got Death Stranding 2 to play and all that sort of thing, so look out for all those podcasts. And then anything else that pops up in the meantime. We should be back with, got a message David actually and tell him, but we should be back with Breaking Bad probably next week. I'm going to look to do that next week, get that started up again. That'll be for season 4, so you can look out for that. Of course, you can catch up with our Breaking Bad podcast in the meantime. A lot of you have been doing that, so thank you for doing that as well again. So there is that. Anyway, word of mouth, social media, letting people know about if they mention anything we podcasted on, please tell them about said podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers. Ad-free podcast review options as well if you'd like to. TV and film news. Geek Town Radio Tuesdays and geektown.co.uk. Ask for your TV and your film news. Let's look out for that. Oh yeah, there's new Geek Town Radio today, so you can go from here today and get your latest TV and film news. And of course, YouTube Entertainment Talk Plays, just put up some stuff for Death Stranding, put up some stuff for Expedition 33, just reviewed Expedition 33 by the way, so you can look for that as well. God, what a game that is. It's really damn good, Expedition 33, so check that out as well. And that's it. Thanks for listening. I'll be enjoying the international break because I won't have to watch this team play for 2 weeks. Because Ruben Amorim's probably going to be the manager when he comes back, isn't he? So, yay. All right, anyway, I'll see you for all that in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Goodbye.